Well, good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Sherry KB, and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Friday, April 17th, 2020, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in RAT Chapter 11, page 151 in A Vision for You, starting with the second paragraph, beginning with "The less people tolerated us," and we'll be reading this one paragraph only, ending in "Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand." We'll be commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Dory P. for the 12 Steps, Pam M. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Julie E. B., Brandy M., and Jordan L. Our newcomer greeter today is Kaylee R., and Dawn B. will be doing our announcements. And Lynn S. is doing our recording. Thank you, everyone, for your service. The share ID for yesterday, Thursday, April 16th, 2020, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 14,453. That's 14453. And the share ID for this morning's Friday, April 17th, 2020, our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 14,460. That's 14460. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Dory P. to read our 12 steps of OA. Good morning, Dory.
Good morning, everybody. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity of service.
And thank you, Dory P., for your service. And now, Pam M. will read our 12 Traditions of OA. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning. Blessings to all of you. This is Pam M. in upstate New York with the 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
And
namaste,
thank you
everyone.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your share to approximately, sharing on topic and literature and what we're discussing, and keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press *1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except for the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in Chapter 11, A Vision for You. We're reading that second paragraph, starting with, "The less people tolerate us," and it ends with, "Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand." And now we will have Julie E.B. begin reading. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs, and just so blessed to be in this community. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did, then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderness, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Well, for me, there's so much in this paragraph. You know, one more failure, it says right above this paragraph. And that's how I saw my disease. I didn't realize I had a disease. I was watching a national program last night about mental illness and addiction, and they were asking about addiction this time, and the person speaking shared, well, you know, it's an illness, and so you got to take off the blame and shame, or as we call it, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And, you know, I didn't just awaken to visit those. That's how I experienced my whole life growing up. For whatever reason, I had this sensitivity to life, this way of living, this way of processing what I call my lower power, that life was very scary for me, confusing for me. It never turned out the way I wanted and seemed hopeless. Those are how I summarize the Four Horsemen. And so when I would have what I would call one more failure, which means I was back in the food, you know, some of you know, 300 pounds, bed bound, 6 medical specialists, And then I would go into fix-it mode, trying to rest happiness and satisfaction in a life by just managing it well. And then I'd have these two lives, one on the outside where I was looking. Some of us sought out sordid places, all sorts of places. Some of the sordid places for me were trying to be perfect at my job or with my family, or at all-you-can-eat buffets. You know, I would find understanding, companionship, approval. But nothing from the outside works. I'm subject to king food and king not eating food because I'm a compulsive over and under eater. If I became subject, if that was the center of my life, whether it was food or other people or success, perfectionism, all I am is looking for approval. That is never going to work. I'm looking for a momentary reprieve that once again is not going to work out because I'm going to have oblivion for a bit. Maybe I'll eat until I fall asleep, but that awful awakening to face that terror. I don't know what's going on. And I do the same thing if I get into emotional inebriety. I come out of it and go, that's not it. But with this program, there's hope. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. You've been in that ever blacker place, feeling alone. And, you know, one of the pieces of this program is you are not alone today. And now I get that word from my higher power. I'm not alone. Down deep inside of me, I am exactly who I'm supposed to be. You know, this big book, thank you, talks about a God. That we need to grow our God. People on the line talk about a bigger God, but we also need a God more personal to us, a smaller God in the nooks and crannies when we get into these places where we feel oh so alone, and they're just habits that we have of the way we think about life. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Julie B., for getting us started. So just reminding everybody, we're in Chapter 11, A Vision for You. We're on page 151, the second paragraph, beginning with the less people tolerate us. It ends with unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And we're asking that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. And we thank you for your cooperation. Who would like to share this morning?
Christina J.
Okay,
Brandy
I think
M.
I heard two Christinas. I think I heard a Christina J and a Christina M. Am I correct?
That's Pam M.
Pam
M.
Sorry about that, Pam. Okay, I got Christina J and Pam M.
Brandy M.
Oh, we're going on the M here. Okay. All right, Brandy M. I got you too.
Kathleen
Monica
O.
Monica M.
Kathleen O.
Heather
and,
W.
And I got Monica. Monica, what's
yes,
the first
ma'am.
Initial of your last name?
Monica M.
M as in Mary. Okay.
Yes,
and I think
ma'am.
I heard Heather W. And Heather, I'm going to take you on be the first one on the second round. Okay? So this is who I have. Julie E.B., Christina J., Pam M., Brandy M., Kathleen O., and Monica M. Christina J., please go ahead, and you'll be followed by Pam M. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning. Thank you for your service this morning, Christina J., gratefully recovering in the state of Washington today. You know, I've been contemplating this paragraph for the last 3 hours, and in my 30s, God began to show me, unbeknownst to me, what loneliness was. I would go on these horrific diets because my husband wanted a California babe, and, you know, looking anorexic with big titties and slim hips was the look, and, you know, I'm a woman. I have curves, and he couldn't accept that, you know, and I can blame him, but the truth is I have a disease, and so it just made my fear worse, the fear of unacceptance, the fear of non-validation, the fear of non-love, which I was chasing since I was a child, and I had a connection with God, but I wasn't using God to run my life. I didn't know that I wasn't using God, so when I would go on these horrific diets, but God showed me a few times. One was on an elevator. Not an elevator, but an escalator in Nordstrom's, which I was in the middle of a diet in the second addiction I had then, which was shopping for smaller clothes that I was going to get into. And I was going down the escalator, and all of a sudden, a loneliness came over me that was overwhelming. I didn't know what to do. I wanted a cookie so bad. Another time, he went to work in the afternoons, and I laid on the bed, struggling, white-knuckling through this diet, and a horrific loneliness came over me. I laid there, and I realized, I'm lonely. I'm lonely. And so the loneliness didn't come really from my eating. It was already there. And you know where I sought? The sordid places I sought where I found understanding, companionship, and approval was in food. That was my sordid place, and that's where I got the understanding, compassion, and approval. I felt so good after eating, and I couldn't figure out why. I chased the brain chemistry issue for years after that, wondering, why does this make me feel better? And, you know, the disease hadn't progressed to the horrific level yet of uncontrollability, because I would then go back into diets and things. But, yes, I would wake up. One time I was in the backyard walking, and I realized how heavy I was and how ashamed I was. I couldn't even walk in front of my husband. I was so ashamed because he wanted this babe that I wasn't. He wouldn't touch me. I wouldn't let him touch me. It's a horrible place to live, you know, and it's what I've realized, and I'm going to finish up, is that I've got to have something better than food to go to, and that's what this program has brought me to. These steps have shown me the God part, how I can turn to God when I'm in fear, and I'm going to finish up with this short story. I woke up in horrible fear this morning, and I realized that's not from God. God does not use fear to bring us to Him. So I just, you know, I pray and I work these steps and I love all of you and I thank you and I pass.
Thank you, Christina J. Pam M., you're up, followed by Brandy M. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Pam M., recovered in upstate New York for today. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. You know, when I was really in the depths of this disease, my behavior was so horrible, impatient, intolerant, agitated, passive aggressive, jealous, resentful. I had, you know, by the time I crawled my way into my first OA meeting, I was mad at everybody and everything, and everybody and everything was mad at me too. And I've been working steps, but I'm a workaholic in addition to the to being a foodaholic, and anything, you know, I like to do anything that will distract me from feeling what I feel. And as long as it, quote unquote, looks good, right, in the eyes of society, because I'm also codependent. But what I'm realizing, what really stands out for me at this point where we're in quarantine is, you know, I hear all sorts of people talking about how lonely they are and how strongly they're feeling the power of isolation. And, you know, how they feel withdrawn from society, from all of this, and life itself. And I haven't really been feeling that. And it's drawn to my awakening, to my awareness that, wow, how, and I mean, I've been healing my relationships, but I don't believe I realize how much, how isolated I naturally am. I'm naturally in a state of quarantine, and I had no idea that I was doing that. So I'm really grateful for the program and living in 10, 11, and 12, because I can have the faith that new friendships, new relationships will be built, and that my higher power is going to guide me one day at a time towards having a more balanced home and societal life, and slowly in or quickly, whatever God's rate is, to take me back into socialization again. So thank you for having me share, and with that I pass.
Well, thank you, Pam M. Brandy M., you're up, followed by Kathleen O. Good morning, Brandy.
Good morning. It's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Edmonton, Canada. If you can time me, Sherry, that would be great. So what stuck out for me in this paragraph is subject to king alcohol. So for me, that is definitely king food, king disease, such a painful place to be. Constant feelings of not being enough because of my weight. I remember in social situations, I would play the part, but I would be dying inside because I felt so different from my peers. I always felt separate, never a part of. The disease within me was getting worse and the isolation greater. The disease wanted me dead, and it was progressing in those steps to near death. In the end, I spent so much time on my couch, in my bedroom, sleeping, escaping from the discomfort of being in that torture. Towards my last days, I was using cocaine to stop from wanting to eat. And, you know, the judgment I had around that and the feelings I had around that were just, I couldn't handle it. I felt like I kept picking up because of the discomfort. I needed ease and comfort because I felt so shitty about what I was doing and how I was showing up in life. You know, I was a mom. I was a manager of a business. I was a sister, a daughter, and I wasn't showing up. And so in turn, my feelings inside were so unbearable that the cycle just continued and it got worse until, you know, a short time ago when I was desperate in September, desperate enough to surrender and give up my way of doing things. Life in recovery looks very different. I'm no longer a slave to the food. I don't get wrapped up in the self-hate. I have connection with God that I never knew existed. I never knew this connection existed. I thought I knew. I spent 25 years doing this in program, picking up, relapsing. And, you know, today I just have this beautiful relationship with God, and I don't need people, places, and things to make me feel okay anymore. It's that connection with my higher power that I found through the 12 steps that I'm just okay just being me, which is totally amazing. And so with that, I'll pass. Thanks for allowing me to share, and thanks, Sherry, for your service.
Thank you, Brandy. Kathleen O., you're up, followed by Monica M. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Sherry. I'm trying to set my timer, even though I know you're going to set it for me.
I gotcha.
Okay. So I'm not doing a very good job. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California. And unhappy drinkers will understand. Well, we unhappy compulsive overeaters certainly understand this. I know I do. This, you know, the terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I think that is why I picked up food at such an early age. I was very young because I was in a lot of fear from, I was just in a lot of fear. And, you know, with this quarantine, people are sleeping more, they're drinking more, they're eating more. So many people are losing their abstinence and being forced to isolate. You know, we're social animals, so that doesn't work for a lot of people. But I think fear is the big thing, you know, fear of the unknown. You know, what is going to happen? What's this going to do? And one of the wonderful things about doing the 12 steps is I've learned that fear does not serve me. I will self-destruct if I live in fear. And, you know, part of that is because I future trip. It's like worrying about what's happening tomorrow. And if I could stay connected to my higher power, I won't be in fear and I'll be able to stay in the moment and look at the good and see where I can be useful. You know, this being in fear and despair, this thinking, our disease really is doing these push-ups in our head, and particularly at a time like this. And part of it's from, you know, wanting control. That's why I used to eat so much, because I wanted to be in control. But control is truly an illusion. You know, we don't know when life is going to throw us a curveball, and no one's immune from it. You know, we get thrown curveballs in life. And so my job is to surrender to my higher power and to stay surrendered, because it's the only way I'm going to survive this. It's the only way I'm going to survive the curveballs thrown in my life and the challenges that are given to me. And, you know, we're all in this together. So with that, I pass and thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen O. Monica M., before we actually hear from Monica M., I'm just going to remind everybody where we're at. We're in Chapter 11, Vision for You, the second paragraph, The Less People Tolerate Us, and it ends with, Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand, and I'll take more names after Monica M. shares. Good morning, Monica.
Monica. My name's Monica. I'm a compulsive overeater. And can you hear me? Hello?
Go ahead, please, Monica.
We can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
I'm so sorry. I know that's
it's
annoying.
All right, no
okay.
problem. Go ahead.
this paragraph is just packed with everything that I've been recently experiencing and just having a recent break. I just got out of the hospital 2 days ago for depression, and just all of this is included in that. And I was there for about 8 days. And to connect to that, I looked up the word denizens because I didn't really know what it meant. And it basically means occupants of a mad realm where, you know, we don't really belong. And that's what I took from it. Or no, denizens of a mad realm was what it said in the book, but it's basically being places where we don't really belong. And when I was in treatment, like, I didn't feel that way because, you know, everybody in there was suffering, as was I. And while I was in there, because I live alone when I'm not there, I didn't have the urge to eat, or I was actually abstinent in the hospital, surrounded by every option of junk food and this and that. And it was like I began praying again and getting connected to God, and all of this terror and bewilderment and frustration and despair, like, that I've been feeling for the past 3 years since I relapsed, it's slowly going away, you know. And it was a horrible, dark place to be. And I know that, you know, I still got so much work ahead, but like it says in the book, the loneliness, you know, I was so lonely. I was quarantined also before the quarantine, you know. I stopped living life. All I could think about was food and not eating food. All I could think of myself and my weight and how I looked. And I am a mother of a teenage daughter, you know, who I also noticed started, you know, picking up certain habits. And so just in the last week and a half, I was able to just get to my knees. It just brought me to my knees, and because it was just so dark. And for the first time in, I could say, 3 years, I've got some hope. It was awesome just being out of the hospital 2 days and knowing, okay, on my schedule, this is what I'm doing this morning at 7 a.m. And that I could connect with people, that I don't have to be alone, even though I am quarantined. And just the hope of, you know, I was abstinent yesterday, and I also had I'm sorry?
Time.
Okay, that's all. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Monica. We're glad you're here this morning. And so just reminding everybody, we're on page 151, the second paragraph. And we also ask that, although we do value your experience, that we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order for others to share, might share their experience too. So I have Heather W. first, and who else would like to share this morning?
Lisa J.R.
Devorah
S.
Devorah S.
Sarah
Laura
F.
R.
Sarah
F.
F. As in
F.
Frank?
Sam.
Sam, got it. And then
thank
I
you.
Think, who was right after Sarah? Was that
Laura R.
R?
Yeah, thank you.
Laura R. Okay. And I can take one more. Who else would like to share?
Amber G.
Amber G. Okay, Amber, I have you. So we have Heather W., Lisa J. R., Devorah S., Sarah S., Laura R., and Amber G. Good morning, Heather, and you'll be followed by Lisa J. R. Good morning. Heather?
Great. Hello. Good morning, everyone. This is Heather W., recovered compulsive eater in Baltimore. So grateful to be on the line to hear everyone share. This paragraph and the shares just really hit, make me almost feel emotional because I remember, 9 years ago before I found program where I was at, you know, just a shivering denizen of king food, king alcohol, king disease, all of it, you know, king fear. And I came into program very young. I had just turned 21. And people, you know, will still say, or I feel like, oh, you look young, or, you know, you really had issues. You look so young. The disease is no respecter of age. I was living, you know, as it says, with that chilling vapor of loneliness. This paragraph really reminded me of a time in my life where I would come home from work. I was in the military. I was in the Navy. I would be at work all day thinking about what I was going to eat. What I was going to binge on. I would go and get that. I would binge. And then I would take NyQuil to put myself asleep and then do it all the same morning. I mean, talk about like the chilling vapor of loneliness that was. I would hear other young people. Again, I was in the Navy. It's a very social thing. I would see and hear other people hanging out, doing social events. On weekends, people would have parties right next to me and I would be upset because I wasn't invited. But I would never think about why wasn't I being invited? I'd just be in my resentment, my anger. And what would I go to for companionship and approval? Of course, I would go to food. That was it. And then I would binge, and then I'd put myself to sleep and do it all again. This was at like 20 years old, living in Miami. You know, it was such, it was a beautiful place, but I was in such a dark place. And those four horsemen, you know, that I would face every morning waking up, the terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And what's really sticking out to me is the bewilderment, you know. Like it says in earlier chapters, I think it might be more about alcoholism, we really didn't know why we would keep going to it. You know, I would binge and then I'd sit there just bewildered. How did it happen again? You know, and again and again and again. And so this paragraph just brings up so emotion. But now on the other side of it, being recovered, having had this book, this spiritual awakening, this psychic change, it's amazing. You know, the life that I'm able to live today, if you would have shown me this or told that girl at 20 years old that this could be me, I would have never believed it. Probably would have never even wanted it, you know, because I was in such a disease. So I'm just so, so, so grateful. It is possible. You might be in this mad realm now, but you can get out. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather W. Lisa J.R., you're up. Queen Cupcake by, and then Devorah F.
Good morning, Sherry, and good morning, everybody. This is Lisa J.R., yes, in Baltimore, gratefully recovered. A former shivering denizen, yes, in the mad realm of King Cupcake. So here we go. I, being a word nerd also, as so many are in this program, which is a great thing, you know, that word denizen, one example I found was an alien resident in a new place, not indigenous. So I was not indigenous. I wasn't born and created to be in the realm of King Cupcake. you know, just a slave to my eating habits, you know, indigenous to the sickness of my disease. You know, I'm really indigenous at my created level to my, you know, to be in communion with my higher power, who I choose to call my Lord and Savior. So this program helped me get there. I was disconnected terribly because, you know, that food, that slavery to the food just stood between me and my higher power like a veil I could not break through until you guys lovingly read the big book with me over and over and over, as you're doing right now, and showed me that there was a different way to live. And I clung on to those promises. I had them. They were a place of hope for me, the promises of the recovery program. You know, we all know 10-step promises. They're all sprinkled throughout the book. But I can't forget that there are also promises of this disease. And this paragraph has a lot of them. Loneliness is one of the promises. Bill's story is full of the promises of the disease. Page 52, the bedevilments are promises of this illness. So I can't forget that, you know, because the first thing I'm labeled to do in recovery is, once I get a little recovery under my belt and I feel comfortable and I'm on top of the world again, boom, I'm right back in the disease. I get right back into self-propulsion and stinking thinking. So I'm so glad that we're going through A Vision for You, because it sort of summarizes the entire book, and then we get into that beautiful story of how this all happened in Ohio. And so, yeah, so don't forget, there are promises, and there are promises of the disease, and there are promises of the recovery. And thank you for helping me choose the promises of recovery. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Devorah S., you're up, followed by Sarah S. Good morning, Devorah.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and thank you, everyone who makes this meeting possible. My name is Devorah S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and really, really grateful to be here. So when I'm reading this paragraph, I don't know, it just brings me back to, you know, it talks about the four horsemen here: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, unhappiness. Unhappy drinkers will read this page, will understand, and I don't know, I just go back, and the person before me said page 52, you know, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey of misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. You know, so I don't know. It just reminds me, going to that page, of what I was like, what this disease can do to me. And, you know, here it is. We're in the book of A Vision for You, and, you know, the chapter Vision for You, and, you know, we're just reminded, you know, of, you know, these are things that we don't indulge in this anymore. You know, thank God we got recovered. We have a relationship with a higher power. We're working on our ego, getting out of ourselves. That's the whole thing of this program, is getting out of ourselves and being of service and reducing our ego. So we're getting out of that state, those elements, you know. Thank God we're not there anymore. But, you know, this is what I did, you know, and people talk about sordid places, and I didn't have to go very far. I lived in my house, you know, waiting for everyone to, my kitchen was my best place, waiting for everyone to go away upstairs and me sneak down and just, you know, indulge, thinking that I'm entitled, that entitlement, because I worked so hard, and if you had the life that I had, then you would do this too. And, you know, it was all, and it was great for me. It, you know, it was like nobody talked back to me. Nobody stopped me. You know, the food didn't tell me, stop already. They didn't have the conversation with me. And that's what I wanted, because I was just full of loneliness and terror. And I had a house full of people. But why was I so lonely? I built that loneliness around me with the food. You know, I blocked people away from me because of the food, because I didn't want to have to deal with anyone and around me. And, you know, thank God today, you know, because of the work of this program, and I work this very, very hard, you know, no matter what's going on around me, you know, I'm not lonely anymore. Thank God. you know, and I'm not looking for the food to make me feel better, and I'm not looking, you know, to isolate from other people. And we are in isolation today, but I'm not alone. You know, my house is full. I have other people in my home, and I have a purpose today, you know, because then it was like my sole purpose was just to get what I want and mow everybody down. And today I don't have to do that. I can live for other people. And how exhilarating that is, you know, to seek what other people, how can I best serve them and God? Always keeping God in the foremost. How would God want me to be? Thank you so much, and I pass.
And thank you, Devorah S. Sarah S., you're up, followed by Laura R. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. My name is Sarah S. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm not going to say I'm recovered because I'm not. When I see the word terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, unhappy, I remember as a little girl, I poured maple syrup in a cup. I must have been 9 or 8, and my mother yelled at me, and I was mortified. I poured a big glass, and I used to go in the refrigerator or freezer. I used to take an ice cream, and I remember it was not enough. I wanted more at that moment. And I used to go back in and then go hide in the shower and eat it. I'm also a recovered alcoholic and cocaine addict, 19 years. I'm sober, but I'm not recovered with my food. When I stopped my drugs and alcohol, I used to wake up for about 2 years in the middle of the night and eat, sit on the couch with a case of cookies, and I did it for a few years. I was in such terror and bewilderment. I also have exercise bulimia where I would have to go run that off. I did it for a few years. I'm not engaging in those behaviors anymore, but I still engage in some behaviors now, so I'm not recovered. I listened to this meeting. I wish that I can find that to put down all the food and all the behaviors. I am just not there yet. Thank you.
Sarah S. And Laura R., you're up, followed by Amber G. Actually, I'm sorry, I don't think we're going to have time for Amber G. We've got like 3 minutes left. So Laura and Amber, I hope you'll hear on Monday. Laura, go ahead, please.
Thank you. This is Laura R., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater out in Colorado. Oh, man, what an awesome paragraph. You know, it's just this morning I was actually kind of looking at the 10th step and the 12 and 12 and so absolutely grateful for the fact that we have tools today that can help me look at when I feel loneliness or fear or terror or bewilderment. And, you know, it comes up from time to time. And, you know, now I look at it almost as a gift. Before I just didn't know what really was going on. And so I used things outside myself to fix that. But, you know, now what's so awesome is that I can look at, okay, you know, I'm getting disturbed with an individual and something's, you know, wrong with me. It really doesn't have, you know, it has nothing to do with what's going on with that individual. And so let me look at that and thank you, even though in the moment it doesn't feel comfortable. A couple of weeks ago, I mean, my family and I we love each other. It's great. It's a blended family. But, you know, we've been together for 9 years, but now we're together. You know, my college kids came home, his wife, my 18-year-old, my 6-year-old, and my husband, and everyone's here working from home and, we're, you know, going to school and the whole deal. And things started to crop up. And, you know, it brought me all the way back to when I was young and just that terror. I mean, I literally feeling terror. And I am so incredibly grateful that I was able to sit down and do the work and talk to my sponsor and talk to other fellows and really look at, you know, why am I resentful? And it has nothing to do with my family. And I was blaming all of them for my insecurities and my uncomfortability. And now I get to like sit with God, pray for my family, you know, and ask God to touch those parts within me that are scarred from when I was younger and heal it. And you know what? It's not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for a lifetime, but it's so cool. I think I was listening to someone earlier that was talking about how she, that relationship with God. And it's so awesome that, you know, I'm still, you know, I remember Mark Houston once said, does anyone understand questions God? And only one person in the audience raised his hand and he's like, seriously, it's God. Like, who doesn't, you know, have questions about God. And I just love sitting there not knowing exactly what my higher power is, but just knowing that he's with me or she's with me or it's with me. And knowing that if I continue to do this deal one day at a time, I don't have to feel those feelings every day like I used to. And seriously, every day from the time I was little, before I even picked up anything, I felt people didn't tolerate me. And I went to outside stuff. I never felt comfortable in my skin from the moment I came out of the womb and grabbed onto to anything that would make me feel comfortable. And today, because of recovery, I've learned to put those things down, feel the feelings, go to the steps, go to God, go to fellows, and, you know, have a solution today and be able to get to know myself more and love myself, because I don't, you know. And so I'm learning how to love myself one day at a time because of all you and because of this program and God. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
And you know what, Amber G, we do have time for you. My apologies. Can you star one to unmute and share with us this morning, Amber? Amber G? Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Would anyone else like to jump in for a couple of minutes here? Any burning desire? Okay, well,
This is Mary Grace. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Go ahead, Mary Grace. You got about 2.5 minutes. Thanks.
Sure. I was very glad to hear everyone. I was a little depressed with a few of the shares, and I just want to say that you don't have to stay in that place, and I know that we all know that, and the steps work, and so I encourage everybody to use the steps with their sponsor at this time. I can just share that I call it sheltering in place. I don't know what anybody else calls it. It's pretty much since the beginning of March, and it's very interesting. I don't feel lonely at all. I live alone. I haven't eaten. I've woken up in the middle of the night sometimes with some tension, as I'm sure we all have, and I haven't eaten. And I have to give the credit to my higher power. And the fact that the program does work, but I have to do the work, which includes listening to this, working with my sponsor, going to telephone meetings, and all the other things that we know work for us. So God bless all of you, and take care.
And thank you, Mary Grace. Well, I think we're going to end early today. I think it's a sign. We need to probably have some more time for newcomers to call in and give their phone number and everything. So we'll go ahead and close today. Thank you, Team Friday, for your service today. And we're going to have Brandy M. read A Vision for You on page 164. And it's, our book is meant to be suggestive only and read until, keep you until then. Brandy? Thank you, Brandy.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us and to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him, to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you safe.